Welcome back to the Don't Worry About It podcast, where we talk all things mental health related, from anxiety to depression, from happiness to sadness, and all emotions and feelings in between. My name is David Izzo, and I started this podcast to help facilitate conversations related to mental health topics. On this week's episode, I had the pleasure of having on Judah S. Goldman, a musician, singer-songwriter, and performer. He's the frontman for Dr. Ted and the Stone. I met Judah all the way back in middle school, and we outwent to high school together. He's somebody who I considered a friend. Unfortunately, we had lost touch, so it was really nice to catch up with him, hear how he's doing in life, and to hear how he's overcome a lot of challenges, especially related to his mental health, from anxiety and depression, dealing with being diagnosed, multiple diagnoses, as well as the medications that come to follow, and how he's found a way to balance it all out. I think this conversation is something that I'm going to continue to process from after having, and it's given me a lot to think about. I know I'm better off after having it, and I really want to thank Judah for having the courage for taking me up on the offer and coming onto the podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Judah Goldman, welcome to the Don't Worry About It podcast. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me, man.
Yeah, it's good to chat with you. Judah and I actually went to SAR High School together, and it's cool just to reconnect with you and to hear a little bit about, you know, before we were chatting, to hear what you've been up to. One of the best parts about starting this podcast, besides for having such great conversations, is to reconnect from people from my past. So great to have you on, and I'm excited. But if you don't mind for the audience, if you don't mind introducing yourself.
Sure. So my name is Judah Goldman. I sometimes go by Judah S. Goldman if you're feeling saucy. I work as a musician. I'm a friend of David's from way back in high school. We graduated in 2013 together, which is really crazy to think about. That was, I guess, 7 years ago, going on eight. But yeah, I'm a professional musician. I play in nursing homes. That's my big bread and butter. I play in all the old home facilities. It's a lot of fun. I used to play in bands and do things in bars and things like that. Obviously, with COVID, I've been out of work since March. Things have been kind of marginal with working as a musician, and work's been very hard to find in pretty much every other field. But I've taken the time over the last, I guess, how long we've been in quarantine now, or lockdown. Since March, I've taken the time to record an album. Wow. That's what I was dedicating most of my time to. And now things are finally starting to open up a little bit. I got Zoom performances. I do online things for seniors, and if you have like an old relative who's living alone and you'd like to buy them an hour of music or an hour of company, that's something that I do now. I offer online services on my website for older adults, for entertainment and things like that.
Wow, it's really, really interesting. I know COVID has impacted and changed everything for almost every industry. You know, people have had to adapt, and it can't be easy. You know, I know employment has been really hard to find across all industries, people losing their jobs and people not knowing what to do. I think that's really cool that you're able to combine your two passions of music, your passion of music with doing, you know, a real service, you know, the people who are alone, people who can't go see the elderly, that you know, that don't really get the so much, that can't really get the human interaction that they really need. You know, we need human interaction, and you're able to provide that service. I think that's really, really admirable and really great, especially being able to turn those two things and parlay them into a real service.
Thank you. Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to do, actually. I love being able to go to the homes and play music. And also, I love the music that I get to play, which is another part, a big thing for me. Because I've always had a passion for older music. And I get to throw in some 1930s Cab Calloway songs or some of these older jazz staples. There's this one song called "I'll See You in My Dreams," and everybody loves it. And it's one of my favorite songs. And it's just great that I get to actually do something that I love and make people happy with it.
Yeah, I know music for a lot of people really has such a real big impact the way people connect to music. I've always looked at it with an eye of jealousy and for people who can play an instrument and people who can sing and who can do anything in the arts. I'm tone deaf. I can't dance. I can't draw. I can't do anything artistic. I'm really like that bad artistically. And for anybody who's able to do that, it looks like such a, but it is such a great outlet. You know, it's taken me a while to get back into listening to music. For a while, I had so many, you know, you connect to songs emotionally. Music plays such a big role in memories, association, and mood,
Of
right? If you're
course.
in a bad mood, you listen to sad music. It doesn't, I mean, it feels, sometimes it can feel good, but it can make you feel worse. And there's such a big connection. Now, I'm curious to hear how, you know, your passion and love of music has affected your, you know, your emotions, your feelings, you know, and your overall mental health.
So music has been, I guess, my main outlet in life. I didn't do too well in high school. I did marginally better in college. But music was always the number one thing that I was interested in. I always, no matter how I was feeling, there was music that I could turn to and use as an outlet. And that did guide me a lot in my decisions in what I wanted to do professionally, certainly. When I got to college, I initially was only a music minor, and I was a psychology major because I figured, oh, I don't need my degree in music; it's not going to be too important. I ended up changing that and got a double degree, or double major in music and psychology. But it was interesting because I took that and I went to graduate school or a post-grad program for music therapy after college at Shenandoah University. And
What is music
so,
therapy?
music therapy is a very, very wonderful, very amazing, incredible tool. It's basically, it is, y there are different forms of music therapy, first off. It's not only one size fits all. Music therapy is a broader category of therapeutic practices that incorporate elements of music. So, one great example is with stroke victims or people who are learning to walk again after an accident or regaining mobility. They'll often work with an occupational therapist or a physical therapist as well as a music therapist. If they so choose. Unfortunately, it's not as readily available as it should be, but the music therapist will help them basically establish rhythm in their gait as they're learning to learn like reorient themselves and walk again. So they'll play music along with the therapy that follows the rhythm and the tempo that they're going at. So the brain is able to internalize this sort of, okay, this is how it goes with the rhythm, like this when I walk, and it helps the brain remyelinate itself. Because music, they've another wonderful thing that music therapy does is they have studies have shown that it can help. It helps with memory because of the way it really sticks. It's so emotionally connected. It lights up the brain in so many ways that music can, that's why music can bring back memory. It's because it's not stored in one location in the brain. It's the whole brain is music.
Interesting.
And there are a lot of amazing facilities that are doing incredible work. The program at Shenandoah is amazing, and I would like to just, I guess, call out Dr. Anthony Meadows, who's wonderful, who led the program when I was there, and a place to be in Middleburg, Virginia, that does incredible work with special needs children and music therapy and performance therapy. And it's really incredible to see the work that they do.
So music therapy, I mean, music therapy to, you know, I would have originally thought And you know, it kind of, now that you said it, makes a lot of sense, right? With rhythm and learning how to walk and to do movements. You know, each song has, I know I always think of the EDM term. I'm sorry, I know EDM might be a sore subject with you, but a beats per minute, and when you're trying to get people to dance, they purposely, you know, create the beat to get you to get you to move along, and it kind of can hijacks the body and gets them people moving without them even necessarily realizing the heartbeat to start to sweat a little bit. And so that obviously can be translated into, you know, bringing people to the rhythm of how they should move. I never really thought about it from that
Yeah,
perspective. So
that's
it's really
exactly
cool.
right. It's pretty much the same principle reapplied for a more commercially available ravey setting.
Right. So you go to school, right? You graduate SAR, you go to college to study psychology, music. Why do you get into I'm always curious why people get in. I know why I want to get into psych. I'm always curious why you want to get into the field of psychology.
So I've done a lot of thinking about this, and I think the reason I really got into psychology was because I wanted to learn more about myself. I wanted to learn what was going on in me, and the world, and why things were the way they were. 'Cause that was always like the big question for me. Why am I like this? 'Cause I've had a lot of struggles with mental health. I've had a lot of insomnia in my life, and a lot of ups and downs, anxiety, depression. So I think for me, it was kind of a way to be able to come to terms and be like, oh, that's why I feel that way. Not quite a justification, but like an
An explanation.
explanation, exactly. That's what I was looking for.
The reason I was, you know, one of the reasons why I was able to understand what you were saying is because it's exactly why I wanted to go. I was so interested in studying psychology. It's why I didn't want to take AP Psych in high school, but why when they offered a regular psychology course, I wanted to sign up for it and I fought for it is because I'd always thought that I was different and that there was something wrong with me. Growing up, I was like, why is my brain hyperactive? Why am I thinking? Like, I have so many thoughts racing through my head. Like, even if I would talk to other people and explain it, they didn't always get it, or I didn't, my perception was that they didn't understand it. And I just thought my brain doesn't work the same way as others do. This isn't what it's supposed to be. And I wanted to understand why I am the way I am. And you know, hearing you say it and, you know, understanding it myself and now after getting older, I think it's not uncommon. It makes a lot of sense why people would go study psychology. And I think trying to understand yourself, I don't know if it's, I don't, I genuinely I haven't thought enough about it, but I don't know if it's the best motivation and what makes people good psychologists, but I think it's just an interesting phenomenon. You know, there's not many professions where that's where, or fields of study that you'd go into because you want to understand yourself, right? If you're going to play a sport, it's due to athletic ability and hand-eye coordination and a few other tactics. But going to psychology because you don't understand yourself, and you know, you mentioned you've had insomnia, anxiety, depression, and other mental health challenges. It makes, you know, when you're at that age, right? High school is, and being a child is a lot of fun, but it's hard. You know,
Yes.
being in high school is like the emotional like wheel where you hit every single one of them, like happy, sad, fun,
Right.
angry, funny, laughter, really anything and anything really in between there. You kind of hit it all and it's you kind of finish it and you're kind of like, I'm 18 now and I don't know anything about anything. And I just spent all this time studying all these different
Right, in
things.
a dual curriculum, no less.
Yeah, high school's hard. I mean, I just spoke about this last week with somebody. We also went to high school with explaining, you know, if you think about what high school is, right? Especially with our dual curriculum with Judaic studies, it's, you know, we had to be in school by 8. So if you live, depending on where you lived, you might have had to wake up really early. I remember we had a girl in our grade that lived very far away. She woke up every morning, like 5:30 in the
Right.
morning. And, you know, it took her even longer to get home. So, you know, just because our school day, we had to be in at 8 and we got out at 5:10, you know, that's already a
And then
long day.
extracurricular
We travel.
activities, no less. I was in drama and music and choir, so I was usually in school until at least 7:30 or 8 p.m.
Right, and then you're not getting home until God knows when, and you have dual curriculum of tests and all this other shit. And then, no, it's also just figuring out how to be a teenager, right? Sometimes you're, I mean, going through hormone changes, being in a co-ed school where you're not allowed to, and a JUVEX school where you're not allowed to, you're just thrown into this crazy mosh pit. And to come out, I really do believe this, and I think it's a real testament to a lot of people who come out of high school okay enough where they end up going to college and they do well. I think if I would give advice, I mean, I don't give advice or anything, but I think the best thing you can do is to come out of high school being as emotionally stable as possible. I think that's kind of the, I think if you're able to run that gauntlet of high school and you can come out being okay enough. Now, everyone's got a different threshold of what being okay is, but I think if you can come out of there sane enough where it doesn't significantly derail you for the rest, you know, for your next immediate years, you're probably okay, regardless of how studious you are and whatever your GPA is. I think I really do believe that, and more the more I think about it, if you can just come out of it. And some people are able to do it based off of factors that are out of their control, whether it's family, whether it's friends, whether it's, you know, just brain chemistry. Some people are just have different brains. You know, some people are born with other conditions. It's hard, man.
It's really hard. I mean, it's interesting. I've known a lot of people to make it in having trouble, and I've known a lot of people to derail themselves in college. So it's interesting what the measure of okayness is, or like you've achieved a good enough maintenance of your mental health to say, okay, you're passable. You can move on now.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. I mean, you mentioned insomnia, and that's really, I mean, sleep's important. Sleep affects every facet of how you are. And there's obviously questions of how much we need to sleep. There's different opinions. But as like a teenager, you know, sleep's important for a lot of reasons. One,
yes,
a day. It eats time. People don't realize that, you know, sleep, you think it's just for rest and you're more awake and you're fresh, which is all true. But if you're awake for more that many hours of the day, there's a more time. And I know for me, when I had a brutal summer for like about 7 to 8 weeks where I just had – I slept – my sleeping schedule was just totally thrown off. Thankfully, it happened in the summer where I would sleep between 5 and – between – I'd fall asleep between 5 and 7 in the morning and wake up between 12 and 2 in the afternoon. And I just – I couldn't sleep at night. Yeah, and it really messed me up because you're up at hours that you're not supposed to, and you're also up at hours where you can't talk to anyone. So you're really alone with your thoughts, right? If you're – even if you're with family members, there's no one that's – it's like not, there's no like unless you have an insomnia buddy. It's like a very. It's like not only is it are you awake for other hours, but you're also then off hours, right? When you're eventually you do fall asleep during at some point it catches up with you fall asleep, and now you're taking away hours where you can't talk to people that are actually awake. So you're kind of actually take your not only are you awake at bad times, but you're sleeping where you actually have time to help.
Yeah,
yourself.
Well, it creates a perpetual cycle of isolation. Is what it does.
Yes.
And
what was
well,
that like?
I've had insomnia. I would say I've had trouble sleeping for probably last 10, 12 years. But the full blown insomnia wasn't quite an issue until college. I always had trouble sleeping. I'm a light sleeper. My wife gets up in the middle of the night. I wake up. But what really killed me was this inability to sleep, this wired brain, racing thoughts, anxious, heart pounding, manic-y feeling of you can't sleep, you're up, you're wired, there's too much to do, oh, there's too much on your mind right now, things just sort of snowballed. And I also, part of the issue is I enjoy being up late at night, so I think a part of it definitely was that I allowed it to get to a point where it was unmanageable, but it was really difficult because I couldn't focus on pretty much anything that was going on in school. I was in some higher level psych courses, like psych statistics, and that was not gelling with the whole no sleep thing.
Right.
And on top of that, I was put on several medication, several different types of medication over, I suppose, the last 10 years to manage various mental health disturbances or sleep disturbances. One of them was in my freshman year of college, I was diagnosed with bipolar 2 disorder and put on a medicine called Tegretol, which kind of felt like I had a clamp on my head. It was a little hard to focus. And then I went to another doctor who basically said, "Oh, you don't have bipolar. You have an underlying anxiety disorder with depression. Keep taking that Tegretol. We're going to do a rule out test. You take what did he give me? He gave me Klonopin and he gave me Prozac, and he told me to
Right.
take all three."
Jesus. Whoa. That is
Yeah, no,
intense,
I
man.
think I lost about 5 weeks from that.
I we got I gotta stop and go back here because there's a lot to unpack there. You're in college, you're struggling with you. I mean, you've been dealing with anxiety and some depression in your past as well.
Yes.
Like,
Yes,
you just
sorry.
told me
Yeah,
about
I
the
kind of jumped the gun there. Yeah, no,
bro.
I've struggled with depression. I'd say since around the age of 12 or 13, that's the first time I can remember actually feeling depressed. That feeling of what I recognize now as depression, that back then was sadness and lethargy. Throughout high school, it came to a head. I'd say in my junior year of high school, I was struggling with a lot of things. I'd gone through some weird personal stuff. I'd lost some friends, not to death, just we'd gone our separate ways. And I had gone through a series of emotionally intense breakups, I suppose. And think I was in a very, very dark place. I'm not feeling very well in high school. And that kind of continued. It never got better, but it would lessen, I would say, to the point where I could distract myself with other things until it really came to a head in college. But it was and then I started seeing a therapist when I was 15, who I found her unbelievably ineffective. But that's kind of the way it goes with therapists. Some of them are good, some of them are bad, and you don't know until you go to them, and then you don't know what a good one is until you've had a bad one.
Right. There's the thing with I've talked about this at length on the podcast. I've spoken to a couple of therapists, and had identified going. It's one of the things that I struggled with the most in therapy was understanding what therapy is and if it was helping and understanding matters. And then kind of there's so many different factors that we I want to we can get back into later in the episode. But I think we're in a I think there's a real rawness here that I want to continue into. You're talking about it. At an age of 15, of going to a therapist, of experiencing depression from such a young age, of what you now know or identify as depression at an age of 12 to 13, and these changes in friend groups, and like we spoke about earlier, high school is really hard. Maybe change friends by the day, and sometimes you don't feel like you're fitting in, and you kind of just decide. Maybe you'll relate to this. I know for myself, there were some days that where I made decisions, but it's like it's too hard to make friends, to continue making friends. And some days you're like, I'm better
Oh,
off just being alone.
100%. I always in high school I would describe myself as a misanthrope. Because I don't hate people on the whole, but there are just some days where you just sit and you just go, God, people.
Yeah, no, I think I've heard you. I mean, we had some a fair share of class together. You know, I wouldn't consider, I mean, if looking back, I wouldn't consider us, you know, the best of friends, but I would
Yeah.
consider you a friend, at least not maybe not the whole high school, but I don't think, you know, we ever had any real falling outs. I don't think we ever became best buds, but, you know, looking back and seeing you describe it, just from thinking back, you know, it hurts me, to know that I, you know, like maybe there was, you know, I, and this is kind of a selfish thing, but maybe there's more I could have done to be kinder and to do more, but you can always look back
I
and say that.
appreciate
So,
that. I mean,
you know,
I
looking
can't
back,
really
maybe.
expect
Yeah.
that from other people, 'cause also I know that I definitely wouldn't have necessarily been available to that. I was kind of
Right.
just in my own world of I'm gonna listen to Pink Floyd's The Wall and be angry at the world.
Right. And you kind of find, listen, you find a way to get by as best as you feel you can. And then unfortunately, it's like a double-edged sword, right? The more you're like, I just don't want to be around people. But then there's also like the kind of part where you're like, but I also want
Right, I
to
need that
connect to
connection
people.
of some sort, and I need something better than hiding in my
It's like
room
you'll.
playing music instead of doing my homework.
Right. It can even be, you know, eating lunch and like, especially at SAR where there's, you know, it's, we're all open spaces where you kind of just go into a classroom and then like people come into the classroom, whether hopefully it's not people you despise, but even if it, you know, sometimes it's just nice to just, even if you have your headphones on, to just be alone, but around people, at
Right.
least you have the option, you know, they might say something and you might hear it over your thing and you might just, now maybe I have an option to, you know, share my two cents and maybe it won't be. Like some, maybe they'll like it'll just be that, you know, shared two cents, then the conversation ends, or maybe you end up for the next 25 minutes, you know, having a conversation and talking with people that you never even expected aren't as bad, or you may have more things in common with, or just maybe you just get that sliver of connection that you just kind of need, and then it may never continue, right? It may not blossom into a friendship, but sometimes I just, you know, it's like you want to be alone, but like, you do you? Because like you might put yourself in situations where you at least have the option to connect or to be
Right.
together with people. You know, it's hard. But now I want to kind of, you know, frame it because I want to get, basically I'm trying to get back to, you know, being the diagnosis in college, right? What's going on with you, right? You're building up, right? In high school, you're going to therapist, and therapy is hard. It's hard to, especially to be a kid going through therapy at 15, and then you're going through high school. You're having some big moments in your life. You're losing friend. You're losing good friends. You're struggling to connect with people, and then you get out of high school, right? College is seen as this all be end all, right? They tell people, right, it gets better after high school. You'll go to college, and it'll get better. And for some people, it does, and
Right.
some people, it may not.
I think the freedom can be overwhelming, especially for people like us, who came from I mean, I would say not necessarily people like us, but yeshiva students who come from this world of high
Right.
demand. Your school day is insanely long. Oh, by the way, you're expected to be moderately bilingual, if not trilingual. By the end time you graduate high school, you are expected to know pretty much the entirety of all the Tanakh, books of Tanakh that you learned, and as well as retained all of the Gemara that you learned, as well as remember
Right.
the Renaissance and 100 Years' War, and also whatever the hell you were learning in chemistry last week, and like.
Right. And to give some first for people who aren't in, who didn't go to a modern Orthodox Jewish high school, didn't have that dual curriculum or didn't have that intensity, you could have days where you have multiple tests and essays due with extensive homework assignments. And you can go a week, right? You can go a week with having a test in every single one of your classes, essays, and intensive homework, while also you have drama club. You could have a sport game. You could have a drama club. I remember there's 1 week where I had four things of hockey. I had two practices and like two games in like 1 week, and they were out on the island, which means my school day ended at 5:10. We got on the bus at 5:30, played at 7, got home at like 9:30, 10, exhausted multiple times a week. Like, when was I supposed to
Right,
get my homework
exactly.
done? It's like, it's really hard. And then when you get to college, you now have full control over your schedule. You choose your classes. You choose, you know, your electives.
Right,
Choose how you spend
exactly.
your time. It's all in your
What was
hands.
wild, especially the drama club,
So.
tech week, or at the very least, the week before the play, You were expected to be in school till at least like 10:30. Sometimes we'd be there till midnight. It was wild. And then we'd expect to be back there at like 7 a.m. But yeah, I think the or 8 a.m. whenever it was. I think col the experience of being on your own in college like that, because yes, you do get to choose all of that, but I know for some people, they especially find it difficult when they had this regiment and then they don't have anybody sort of pounding it down their throats and they don't know what to do with themselves and they sort of devolve into an inability to function without someone telling them what to do and they have to learn to get to that point.
Right. And now you're at this point, you're in college, you're still have your you're still dealing
Oh
with
yes.
daily anxieties,
Yeah.
issues, depression. So can you walk me through where that stemmed and how did it was there like a breaking point, a boiling point where you started getting on these
Yeah,
medications? Like
sure.
I want to get to the point where you start getting diagnosed. You mentioned the 5 weeks of just
So yeah.
haze and fog and no memory.
It start so it all started in my freshman year, second semester. I was put on this medicine, Tegretol, and they diagnosed me with
They
bipolar
diagnosed you
two.
by
For those who
and
don't know,
bipolar two. For
bipolar
those who
two,
don't know,
so
what
bipolar is marked as periods of highs and lows. There's bipolar one, which people tend to have more mania, more of the uppity, hyperactive, kind of you can take on the world feeling without a lot of the depression. You have some crashes, but they're less severe. Bipolar two is kind of basically the opposite. You have mania, you have periods of mania, but your default is this deep, dark depression feeling that you sort of oscillate between highs and
Right.
lows.
It's
And Tegretol, my issue now with it is that it is an epilepsy medication, because that's kind of the pharmacology of taking care of people with bipolar is, oh, bipolar is marked as these periods of activity in regions of the brain. This medicine controls activity in regions of the brain, similar for people with epilepsy. If we extrapolate this point and put it on to someone with bipolar two, perhaps it'll work in a similar fashion. So that's basically what they do. And not everybody has the same reaction, and it depends how severe, quote unquote, your symptoms and your presentation is. They're a heavier medication, but Tegretol more or less worked, but it wasn't like a perfect fix, I'd say. And I still struggled with insomnia a great deal. And then it was I believe the next year, my sophomore year, that I was put on Ambien to try to help me sleep, which was effective, but Ambien is one hell of a drug.
It really is. I've had my own issues with sleeping. Says I feel every word you talk about with sleeping. There's some real. I mean, Ambien affects everybody differently. So you're not Tegretol,
And
now you're on Ambien.
I found I couldn't take the Ambien more than 3 days in a row. Otherwise, I would be just irritable and groggy and like just sort of in this general malaise of inability to function. Kind of like a druggy hangover, I guess. Those are some strong medication. And then the following year, I was pushed to see another therapist to get a second opinion, like a reevaluation, because I had been seeing a local therapist in Allentown, Pennsylvania, which was I was at Muhlenberg College. So there was like 3/4 of a mile down the road, there was a medical center that had psychologists. So there was a very nice reverend who also happened to be a therapist that I spoke to. I saw a specialist in the city, and he basically said, "I don't believe that you have bipolar 2. What I get from you is an generalized anxiety disorder that can cause symptoms similar to depression because of how generalized anxiety disorders work." And generalized anxiety disorders is just a silly name for a disorder with anxiety that we don't know enough about to be able to actually define and classify and put in the DSM, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Yeah, it gets very complicated with who something should be.
Right,
It's A, something believe
exactly.
it's B, and it's listen. It's hard. It's trial and error. They try and say we have the answers, and the truth be told, if it works, like if they find figure it out for one person, it works. It's like I don't care if it's generalized anxiety disorder or
Right.
bipolar two. Just
Right,
help me.
exactly.
Like
And
just
so
please help
that's
me.
when I stopped taking the Ambien because it wasn't working. And that's when this guy, very nice guy, but perhaps not the best at advising medicine, because he put me on all three of Tegretol, Klonopin, and Prozac.
And for those who don't
That's
know,
a
like Klonopin
heavy,
is like no
heavy
joke.
drug.
It's a real heavy drug. I mean, it really is. It's a for those who don't know, it's classified as a benzodiazepine. And benzodiazepines, I unfortunately in my life have been put on benzos. It was the worst, if not one of the worst periods of my entire life. It makes you feel like a zombie. You don't have control over really any of your
Yeah.
emotions. You feel nothing. It basically sedates. It basically sedates you. It's good. And I think it works in short term if you're like you need to, if you're like high mania and or if you're
Right.
really at like a bad anxiety attack and you can't take it anymore and you take it, that way you feel nothing. But to be put on
I
that
was
as
n
a
20.
as a 20-year-old kid who doesn't need who's maybe not at that stage. And listen, like I always give the benefit of the doubt to the doc. Some doctors are good, some doctors are bad. Some doctors are good for some patients, some are bad, and for bad for some patients. And I don't criticize, but I have my own bad experience as a psychiatrist. I still have a ton of respect, and I believe medicine work can work for some people. But to these, I think they're a little, and by little, I mean at least that's me saying it nicely, a little too candid
Yes.
to hand out these benzos, and especially as
No, it's
I don't.
not.
It's not a long-term solution. And mixing it with these other drugs, especially, I mean, putting you on Prozac with Klonopin, I know, and then also with this Tegretol, like you're really knocking the person out. Not only that,
Right.
you're not put into a place where you can get better. There's no, you've no chance of
Right.
getting
It
better when you're on
was
these medications.
pretty much
You
like
can't.
being a walking zombie. I had no emotion. Even music brought me very little enjoyment, which was very sad for me. I had a music professor who was beyond dismissive of who I was and the music that I was doing and my well, I'm not going to claim to be the best student here, but my academic achievements. That definitely lent to this feeling of, oh, I'm just in this, I'm just going through the motions. There is no joy, there is no life. And it was very, very difficult to function that way, especially your second to last year of psych degree. I was expected to take research methods and psych stats. I had to drop psych stat because I couldn't function in classes. I was barely functioning in my music classes. And I was still struggling with insomnia. Because it didn't always help. I'd find myself awake till like 2, 3 a.m. and then I'd wake up at like 8 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, dealing with all that you're dealing with, that's a full-time job in and of itself. Now, balancing intensive schoolwork, balancing friendships, I mean, it must have really taken a toll
Oh,
on
certainly.
your
And
relationships with other people. Like, how?
I had the great benefit of having a lot of friends very quickly. In college, it was one of those situations where everybody moves in freshman year, you're all on the same floor, and then you find out that they're all chill guys and you all just hang out together, and that's like your established friend group. So it was definitely the year where people go abroad. People were not talking to each other. Some rifts had already begun to form. My best friend was the former best friend of one of the guys from my freshman year, and they were like constantly pulling at me to be like, who do you want to hang out with?
Oh God. So yeah,
Right,
exactly what happened in
exactly.
high
High
school
school
is what
never
I was gonna
ends.
say to you. That part of high school. Yeah, it's because then we think it's like, oh, you're just being like you're in high school, and you kind of realize that if you don't grow up, that shit follows you when you're in college, when you're an adult,
Right.
when you can into your older years. So now you're at this point in your life where you're on these medications. How does it? How do we? How did you get? How did you reconcile?
So,
How does that end?
a family friend, actually, a family friend who is a psychiatrist, reached out and talked to me a little bit about what was going on and advised me to stop taking what I was on. And I'd say one of the things that I think surprised me from the experience was my therapist, who was seeing me every 2 weeks, I'd say, didn't seem to think that there was anything overly wrong with me, other than I was just tired and depressed, which confused me. 'Cause he knew what I had been put on. But this family friend basically said, start cutting your pills in half, stay on the Tegretol, take yourself off of the other ones. I found the Klonopin worked as like a rescue pill. If like, oh, I really
Right.
can't sleep, this is I need to sleep, or like I'm having a panic attack, I need something. And I never really found a great deal of relief from those. But I ended up taking myself off all of those, except for Tegretol. And I stayed on Tegretol for through my 1 year of graduate school, at which point I was feeling better emotionally. And I think I was at a better point in my life. And I actually took myself off the Tegretol. I had not been seeing a therapist. And that's a little bit of a reckless move when you're on epilepsy medicine. But I was already down to a pretty low dose, and it was not the smartest thing I did, but it was probably one of the best things I did, because I have not taken any medication since 2018, and I feel great.
Wow, that's unbelievable, man. That's awesome. Listen, I neither of us, and you'll clarify for yourself, I do not recommend anybody
Yes.
going cold turkey off these
Please do
medications.
not
Please,
follow my ex
please,
my
please
example.
make a plan with your doctor. No, I mean, listen, I had a similar experience where I just said I wanted to get better. I was feeling like shit. I was having panic attacks. I had such high levels of anxiety, and I was being put on these medications. So my anxiety, I how could I know if I couldn't really tell if I was anxious because I would just be on all these medications. So I didn't have any feelings, and I was throwing up. I couldn't keep food down. If I did like not take the Klonopin, I'd end up with a high acute anxiety attack where leave me sometimes like on the floor shaking, and it got really bad. And then got to a point where I kind of started to do a little research. I had some really good friends explain to me what benzodiazepines do to you, and It's really not safe, and I really lost a lot of faith in my doctor, and I didn't consult with him when I just kind of went. I wasn't on crazy high doses, thank God, but I took myself off the medication, and I said, oh, fuck this. I want I, it's time. I need to. I can't do this, be on this anymore. And I stopped taking the medication, and I went through a pretty brutal week of withdrawal, which was, I don't recommend
Yes.
anyone. It's really dangerous. There are people who die from going cold turkey. So anybody out there, please, please be responsible. I'm an idiot. I shouldn't have done what I did. I shouldn't have done. I got a good result off really bad process, and that's
Yes,
not how you should
I
live your
second
life.
that notion. Please do not
Please.
follow our example. I'm glad it worked out for us, but
Like
please.
I'm very lucky. Right, we're very lucky, and it's about five, which is leads to the importance part of, you need to find a doctor that you trust, and it's hard to find good doctors and good people that work for you, but it's so important, and do it responsibly. But thank God, it worked out for you. You've been on no medication since 2018. You got through the life. Do you does it I guess now like does Do you ever get like an answer of whether you have
Right. Does it
bipolar or not? Does it
matter
matter?
is the
And in what
broader
way does it matter?
question. I suppose, from an identity perspective, when you've been in that world and you've been told that you're one thing, there is a coming to grips with what are you? And then does it matter? Which I think are two different sides of the coin. I would. I'm so sorry, my mind just went blank. Can you please?
No, I don't worry about it. Listen, it's hard. It's really hard to reconcile with. I
Right.
think there's a
Oh,
lot of identity
right.
that goes
That's
into mental
sorry,
health,
my
right?
brain just
It's
phew,
being
fell out of my head for a second there. Yeah, I never really got a full answer. The way that I see it is, I think I have anxiety. I do. And I think I have depression. I don't know if bipolar is the word for it, because it's one of these things. If anybody who's ever read the DSM, the way we classify psych, the psych Bible, yes, exactly.
The Bible of psychology. Right.
It's all a checklist, but a lot of the time the checklist can check off multiple things on multiple diagnoses, and then it's just a matter of, okay, we're just gonna go with this one and see what happens. So I don't know if I believe that I'm bipolar. I don't know if I doubt it, but the way I look at it is, I have something with anxiety and depression, and sometimes it still keeps me up at night, but I have dealt with it enough, I think, and I've figured out how to allow myself to get through it in a constructive and healthy way. I can't recommend CBD enough. It's an incredible thing. Cannabis is a miracle plant. I think it is great for anxiety. I do not believe that it should be used for depression. I think that's hiding from your problems. But anxiety is a very real thing that many people deal with, and I believe that cannabis is good for helping that. And things like CBD are wonderful for anxiety. The something I think you should take, like, you can, I shouldn't say you should. You can take like a supplement, in my opinion, just like 25 milligrams of CBD.
Yeah, and I'm a big. I'm glad you brought up CBD. In terms of my next question is going to be like, what do you do? So you answer a lot of that. CBD is something that I use. I don't use. I was at a point using it on a daily basis. I don't because of I don't like to be dependent. It's a part of a character flaw. It hurts me in other areas in my life, but I don't like being dependent on anything anymore. It really stemmed from. I had a really I didn't I don't know if it was classified as addiction, but I was very dependent. I became very dependent on marijuana, on weed, marijuana, whatever you want to call it. When I was going through a tough time in my life, from about I was smoking a lot, and I was
really became dependent on. And the problem with it was it really really increased my anxiety levels when I wasn't smoking on it. So while it did help with my anxiety, and listen, I like to call myself the biggest fan and pro. I'm an advocate for marijuana, for weed. I think people, if it works for them, they should use it. I think you need to be very careful and very honest with yourself about why you're using it and what it can do. It has unbelievable benefits with relaxation. Some people really does help them with anxiety. Some people it helps them, you know, with pain management, and there's so many wonderful benefits, but like anything else, be responsible about it and be careful about becoming dependent on it. For me, it became a thing where if I didn't smoke, then my anxiety the next day would be so high. And well, guess what I have to do now if I have high anxiety? Smoke more weed. So I was basically just feeding the beast inside of me. So for me, I haven't smoked weed in over 4.5 years now. But I'm still a fan of it. I wish if I would. I just don't ever. And I always think about it. Well, maybe I could. Maybe I can't. I don't know if I'll ever smoke again in my life. I'd assume at some point I probably will consume weed in some capacity. But who knows? I don't need it anymore. But CBD, such a fan of it. It's not. You don't become dependent on it. There's no psychoactive properties of it. It just helps you get to a baseline with your anxiety, which. The goal is to get to a place where you can actually do the work and to deal with your problems and get to a place where you're actually in a situation where you're aware of what's going on with yourself and can then do the work and process emotions, feelings, thoughts, and anything there just helps you relax and get to a place to do those things. And that
right. Exactly. And that's thing. Right. So, I like to call it cannabis. I believe that cannabis is a medicine. I do believe that. And like with all medication and medicines that have some form of habit causing, je ne sais quoi. It's all about responsible use, because I've known many people who can manage their use and it's not a problem. And I've known people who can't get out of bed without smoking a joint or rolling themselves a spliff. And just that's just how they live their entire existence. And if they're sober, they can't like function and they like bug out. And I do think that you also need to factor in what medication you're on, because that can definitely exacerbate things. And I've definitely had experiences where the things that I was experiencing because I was on medication were exacerbated by some use with friends. And that was definitely something that was not constructive or really good, a good decision on my part. I'm glad I made it through. But it's definitely not something that you should use to run away from your problems. And I'm glad you brought that up. And I think that's great that you're able to say that, and you can say that cannabis is a wonderful thing, but if you are finding that it's too habit forming, you can definitely curb it, and you should curb it if it's a problem.
Yes. I mean, I think in the word abuse is the word use, right? You can either use cannabis to your benefit or you can abuse it. And it ranges from everyone takes it differently. And I think, you know, led me to an important point I want to put out. If you are somebody who's, you know, smoking or drinking or taking anything while on these medications, be very careful about it. And most importantly, have to be honest with the people that are trying to help you, whether that be your therapist, whether that be your psychiatrist, your doctors. Tell them the truth, even if you're afraid of being of getting
right.
The only trouble you're going to cause is trouble to yourself, where you know it can be very dangerous. Some people, everyone's body reacts differently, and that's the thing. What work, and it kind of becomes the mantra of this podcast, is finding what works for you. We all have different genetics. We all have different. Our bodies are all different. Our brain chemistries are different. We're different, and what works for one doesn't work for other. For some, meditation works best. For some, diet and exercise. I think those things will work. And I think diet and exercise is a universal one that helps people, but for some people it becomes their holy grail, right? They turn all that energy, that anxious energy into things. It's about doing something productive. And if you're doing things that stop you from being productive, because at the end of the day, you can smoke yourself into relaxation. But if you don't do the work that causes the anxiety or the depression, or if you're not proactive about these things, they're going to happen to you. And it's not, in my opinion, I think it's not a way to live. It's a way to really deal with your problems. It's going to hurt you in the long run until you do the work and to get through it. And it's hard. The way, you know, people talk about it, it makes it sound, you can sound easy, and it's not. And everyone goes through it differently. And most importantly, to know if you're not alone out there, right? You're not the only one who's gone through this. You're not. And I think it becomes a part of it, right? Where people, you know, to come full circle, you know, becoming, learning that you have anxiety or depression, maybe it's bipolar or schizophrenia or something, it becomes an identity, and it becomes an identity, and it can become an explanation.
Right.
It's full circle, right? We talked about why we got into psychology, and you kind of get into psychology and you're like, I want to understand why it's going on to me. And you find out anxiety, and it's like, in a way, it's like, cool. I have something.
Right. It's not an excuse for destructive behavior. It's not an excuse for drug abuse. Circumstance also is not always necessarily. But it's true. It both helps. It's something different, but it also brings you into a world where you can relate to other people who have had those experiences. And I think that's another extremely important key to getting through it, is having people that you can talk to about it, because not enough people know how to talk about it, and not enough people are able to talk about it or willing. And especially for guys, I mean, there's certainly a machismo thing of, oh, let's not talk about mental health. Depression, what's that? All we do is, like, I don't know, watch sports and drink beer. I think things I don't do in my regular life. I'm not a big alcohol fan. But like, I think it's important to also encourage the dialogue of being able to say, hey, I got these problems. Yes, they separate me and isolate me, but I can find people who don't make me feel as isolated.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's about finding a group of people that you can relate to, and I think there is a comfort, right? There is such a comfort in knowing that you're not alone out there in the world, that you're not the only one going through this. There are people out there that you can connect with, and for some people it's different, right? Some people can connect. Some people have a good family dynamic where they can connect with their parents and with their siblings. Some people don't have, maybe only have one, or maybe it's a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, a cousin. Some people it's their, you know, it becomes their friends. Some people it's, you know, other, you find ways to connect, but it's about finding a way to deal with it enough in your own area where you know that you're not the only person in the world going through this. And when, you know, there's strength in numbers, it's a cliche, but it's a fact, right? You knowing that you're not the only one who's gone through this, and knowing that there are people out there that have, you know, so many great people in this world, they may not have been diagnosed with it, but have had major, major problems in their lives, whether it's a mental health disorder or a physical disorder or anything out there, and people are able to overcome that and do unbelievable things in this world. And most importantly, to know, especially if you're at a high school age, right?
Right. And it gets better. And I think one of the
rest of your life,
at least for me, one of the things that helped me the most was having that creative outlet and having music. Music is still my world. I mean, you walk into my apartment, and there's the hi-fi, and there's a cello against the wall, and I have an instrument rack, and there's a piano, and it's clear that music is just everything that it was. In many ways, I think it's one of the things that saved me and got me through everything I went through. And I think being able to find something in this world to grasp onto and say, this is my thing, through all the ups and downs, I will still have this. I know I'm very lucky that I had that, but I think that's one of the keys. That was one of the keys for me for getting through that.
That's unbelievable. And it brings great, you know, it really does make me happy to hear how well, you know, it hurts to hear, you know, how much struggles you've gone through and the hurt that you've had in your life, but to hear you coming out on the other side and today being, you know, in a place where you're okay enough, that you're doing well enough, right? You've succeeded, right? You mentioned you've gotten married, you've done work, you've gotten, you know, you've finished college, you've
Thank you. I appreciate that.
A lot of ways, and that's,
I really do. Awesome. And I mean, it's great to see you doing this podcast and following your passion project. And I know it's hard to find that passion and that thing that really, really drives you. And I think this is a really cool platform.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you know, it took me, I people ask me, like, what are you passionate about? For me, it took me a while. I didn't know what I was passionate about. I thought, you know, I fooled myself into thinking it was a couple things, but mental health has become something that I want to champion, that I want to, in whatever way possible and whatever way it allows me to, that I'm able to create. I just think by having more of these conversations out there, people will benefit and hopefully in some way, maybe they'll learn something, maybe they'll feel that they're able to open up to somebody in their life and understand
that's
that they're
amazing.
Not alone. And that to me is enough. You know, I have high hopes and aspirations, and there's a plan with it to grow it and to get and to create a better way of doing this. But right now I'm at the place where this is what I'm doing and it's enough for me. And thank God I'm in a place where I can do that.
Yeah.
I'm really grateful. So in terms of, you know, I want to wrap this up by basically giving you the platform. You mentioned you did your own album. Feel free to two parts here. One is, I always give the guests at the end of the episode the open platform to kind of tidy up any thoughts that they had. It's basically an open field here. You can say anything you want, parting shots, last messages, anything there. And then,
yes, well, thank you. I'm glad I have this platform. I'd like to address you all from my soapbox. Please buy my album. I worked very hard on it. It's called The Things You Left Behind. It's 13 original songs and a cover music that I've written over the last couple of years. I haven't put out an album in quite some time. It's been 2 years, I think, for me, 2.5. So it's nice for me to be able to actually put out music again. It was my quarantine project. Basically once work shut down, I had the time and the opportunity to lock myself in my room. My wife's a teacher, so she, was teaching online. So while she was doing Zoom class, I was in the room, recording music, and it was just a really great passion project, and you can find it on my website at Judah S. Goldman music.com, and that's Judah with an H. There, you also, if you know anybody, another shameless plug, but if you know any elder members of the community who would like some custom made music performances, I know a lot of Jewish music, I know a lot of secular music, I do the greatest hits of folk, blues, rock, country, and jazz from the 1920s to the 1980s. That's my voice crack. Sorry. That's my show, that I usually do at nursing homes. So, those are my shameless plugs, right there. But, I think I just want to thank you, David, for having this platform and being able to talk about this. And I think mental health is a very important topic that everybody needs to talk about, especially in high school. And I think in yeshivot, I think it's not enough time is dedicated to it. And if I could say, I guess if I could leave some parting words, it's never underestimate how much it means to just talk to someone as an equal.
I hope you guys enjoyed my conversation with Judah Goldman as much as I did. If you're interested, please check out his music at judahsgoldmanmusic.com/music. I'll put that in the show description below. If anybody out there is interested in coming onto the podcast as a guest, please reach out. You can get me at my email, don'tworryaboutitpodcast@gmail.com, my Facebook page, personal David Izzo, or Don't Worry About It Podcast Facebook page, or on my Instagram at Don't Worry About It Podcast. Thank you guys again so much for listening. I really appreciate it.
If anybody out there has any feedback they'd like to give, there's a topic or a guest you'd like me to speak to or touch upon, I'm really trying. I'm really excited about the pipeline of guests that I have coming up. I really believe the show's only going to get better, and I'm trying to get better at it as well. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you wouldn't mind, please subscribe to the podcast, give me a rating, and review it. Honestly, all open critiques are welcomed. I'll see you guys next week.